All right, so it's 8:05, and we are on live. I'm not sure how many people are on the line, but the conference call is actually being recorded. So I always want to start all our conference calls off with if anyone has any specific questions that they want to ask regarding the program, here's your opportunity in the first few minutes to ask any questions regarding exercise, motivation, mindset, diet, nutrition. Does anyone on the line have any specific questions that they want to ask? Don't all jump in at one time. All right, so anytime I ask that question, I start to hear silence. I don't know whether I want to pat myself on the back and say, wow, you've done such a great job that you've covered everything so thoroughly that no one has any questions, or maybe they're just questions that people don't want to ask as yet because they're not quite sure. So with that in mind, we're going to start with the conference call. And also remember that the conference call is being recorded. And I've had the opportunity to spend time with our guest just recently. And before I announce her, I also want to make sure that everyone knows that ShopRite has done a great service to the community by allowing – hold on one second. That ShopRite has done a great service to the community by allowing a registered dietitian to be available free of charge. And ShopRite has come on to become a sponsor for the Staten Island Slim Down. So I want to take the opportunity to thank them because they've been a great asset by allowing us to have access to their resources and also dedicating resources to the program. So if anyone has picked up the advance today, March 5th, if you're listening to this in a later time, you'll find that on the cover, there's a picture of a very nice picture of a very nice lady, and her name is Andrea Doria Cameron, who is the registered dietitian for the ShopRite on Staten Island, at least the two locations that I've visited. And so she is our guest this evening. And again, as I said before, I've had the opportunity to spend a good deal of time speaking with her. And not only did I find her extremely professional and extremely knowledgeable, but I've also found her to be extremely caring. And so she's our guest tonight. So I'd like everyone to welcome Andrea. How are you doing this evening?
I'm great, and thank you for having me. I'm very excited to be able to participate in the Slim Down this year. So from just, you know, the kickoff and doing this phone call as well as the seminars we're doing in the store. So it's been great for me to just be able to reach out to the community. And so I'm glad that the Slim Down has allowed me to, you know, just get the word out to even more people that we are providing this service. It is free of charge. It's available to anyone who's in need of nutrition counseling, and we do a variety of different things, and so we work, you know, in the store to try to help get the word out there and just help people identify what healthier foods are. So hopefully I'll be able to give some insight to some of you who are on the call this evening and provide you with some practical and very usable tips, so things you can actually start doing as you're grocery shopping and as you're preparing your meals and eating more healthy, well-balanced snacks as well as your dinners and your lunches. So if we're good to go, I'll just get started in my little mini presentation. And I'm not sure if you usually hold questions at the end or do them throughout, but if someone has a question and they're not comfortable asking on the phone call, feel free to contact me. You can call the stores or email me as well. My information, I think, is on the Slim Down events calendar. So
Yes, as long as the net event's down. And what we normally do, you know, if you have your presentation that you want to follow, I kind of prefer to do it that way. And basically what ends up happening is that I operate as an advocate for the listeners. So I'll ask questions that, you know, directly and then kind of engage them in the conversation. And, you know, my attempt is to not, and even though it's tough, you know, speaking with you, is to not make it too technical, even though that's, you know, that's my desire, really, to get into the really technical aspect. But like I said, we'll try to make sure that everything we talk about is really practical to the listener and that, you know, they're basically given the opportunity to eavesdrop on our conversation. If anyone has a question that they would like to ask and they don't feel comfortable asking it on the line, they can always email me at tony@statenislandslimdown.com. That's tony@statenislandslimdown.com. I'll be retrieving those emails and making sure that those questions get asked.
Great.
All right. So.
All right. And I had a chance to peek at the Facebook page, and I know you did the grocery shopping tour last weekend, and I'm glad I peeked at it beforehand because I know there was a comment on there that a couple of people were feeling a little bit overwhelmed, but there was also some great response to that those comments, which was, you know, it's not about being perfect, and it's about taking it sort of one step at a time. And I definitely want to start tonight's talk just about making that clear. So I'll discuss, you know, going through the grocery store and what are some things we can do to be prepared at home. And when I say the prepared pantry, I'm not limiting it to, you know, things that are just dry goods or canned goods or grocery items, but really just throughout the store, what are we looking to buy? What are some ways we can be successful when it comes to managing our weight? And definitely being prepared. I learned this from a teacher, and I think it works in many different aspects, but it definitely works for grocery shopping and meals. But really talking about those five P's and the prior planning prevents poor performance. So we need to prep a little bit. I think there are several people who just go to the grocery store without a list, replenishing what they've finished and what they've used up on a weekly basis. But grocery shopping is definitely the foundation of eating well at home and even on the go if you're taking those snacks and you have those items with you. So how do you choose the proper foods to build a healthy week? And if you sit down and you really think about what do I want to have in my home, what kinds of meals do I want to have, and thinking about that menu planning, grocery shopping if you don't do it well, could actually turn out to be having, you know, a lot of items that don't match. So it's sort of like going grocery shopping or clothes shopping, and you have, you know, lots of different shirts and lots of different pants but no outfits. So you can have lots of different carbs and lots of different proteins and lots of different vegetables but really nothing to put together or nothing that is appealing to you. So before you even start at the store, thinking about what you can do at home and just setting aside a little bit of time to, you don't have to plan every meal, breakfast, lunch, dinner, snacks, but building upon that. So maybe this week I'm going to focus on getting a few dinner meals that are quick and easy for me and maybe look at some recipes, pull out an old cookbook or pick up a magazine, a cooking magazine. And, of course, using those weekly circulars, so nothing better. They go to your house. They're at your doorstep. So pick up the circular. Look at what's available. Consider what's in season. Helps increase flavor a little bit. And identify, you know, a couple of items from that circular that maybe are even things you haven't had in a while that might sort of inspire you to create a dish. So sometimes you can have old favorites, but make them in a healthier version. So,
Can you give us an example of that?
Yeah, absolutely. So the spring is coming, or even St. Paddy's Day is coming. So we might think of some traditional recipes. So with St. Patrick's Day, a lot of people think of the just traditional, like corned beef and cabbage and potatoes, but maybe identifying a specific recipe you can do with those potatoes to make them healthier. So I'm going to do a demo in the store where I'm actually going to make a cauliflower slash potato mashed potato. So incorporating the cauliflower into the mashed potatoes to lower the calories and increase the nutrient density of that dish. And maybe if you don't like traditional steamed cabbage, you look up a recipe for something roasted cabbage or a coleslaw or something so that you can, you know, be inspired by the theme and what's available and what's maybe on sale that week, but yet you're not necessarily doing it the highest calorie way. You're finding ways to modify it a little bit so that you're including a healthier version of those foods.
Right.
So, and as I said, every month has a theme. Every, you know, this holiday is all the time. So, you know, you can just look at spring and say, well, what spring vegetables are available? Okay, I haven't had asparagus in a while, or I haven't had, I don't know, sweet peppers or something. So you can find something that would maybe make you want to eat those foods when you purchase them and bring them home. And that's another important point when we're grocery shopping is, you know, you don't want to go to the store and buy all these new items but then come home and not know what to do with them.
Right.
So I often like to also remind people that when it comes to weight management, we have to, in our minds, be aware that healthy foods are not always going to promote weight loss. So you can have too much of a good thing. So I definitely think nuts are healthy foods. I think avocados are very healthy foods. But if we have them in excess of what our calorie needs are, we're definitely going to not lose weight, or even that's going to turn into gaining weight. So sometimes you might find yourself picking up foods that are healthy, but you're not necessarily identifying those as foods that could promote weight gain. So just put those little sort of ideas in your mind when you are shopping. So gotcha. You do want to look at the labels, absolutely. You know, and when I say look at the labels, look at the nutrition facts on the side of the box or on the back of the can, because that's where you're going to find the calories. We don't just want to look at the claims when we're grocery shopping. If it says low fat or sugar-free or even gluten-free, that doesn't necessarily mean it's going to help us in our long-term goals of managing our weights. So I always like to use the example of low-fat peanut butter. You can consume regular peanut butter or low-fat peanut butter, and per tablespoon, they're the same calories. So they've taken the fat out, which is a healthy fat, but they've maybe added more sugar to it. So you're not necessarily doing yourself any benefit by choosing the low-fat over the regular. So absolutely look at the labels. And think about, you know, what type of food is this? So how does this fit into my plate? And so going back to online and your description of how we can set up our plate, I often think, too, when you're planning your meals, it's great to have that guideline. If you're thinking of, okay, what's going to be my lean protein? What's going to be my slow-burning carb or my high-fiber carb? And what will be my vegetable? It's a guideline. So if I planned even two or three lunches or dinners just based on this visual of your plate, it helps you build that grocery shopping list.
Right.
You start identifying specific items that can go into that category. So I often, you know, start and end with shop like your grandparents, go with a list, and that's going to enable you to be prepared. When we just keep replenishing the same 20, 25 items that we've gone through the week before, we tend to get bored. We may eat larger amounts of some of those foods because there's a lack of variety, there's a lack of new flavors, there's a lack of excitement in it. So we can actually overconsume calories. So getting something new into the mix and breaking up that routine a little bit can definitely be helpful. Shoppers often report wanting healthier foods, but they're concerned about the additional cost of it. So if you just go in without making a list and without preparing, absolutely, it can cost more money. But if you really sit down and think about, okay, what will I be buying this week in the protein category? What will I be buying in the vegetable category? If you're using the circular and what's in season, then you can identify very specific things. So, for example, this week strawberries are on sale. And, you know, absolutely want to, you know, come into the store knowing that. So strawberries are on sale. They're a great low-calorie, high-fiber fruit that I want to have. I'm definitely putting that on my list. And instead of getting my typical, you know, low-calorie dessert of whatever that is, even if it's Jell-O, I'm going to pick up some strawberries instead. And so just to switch it up a little bit, or maybe I'm going to make myself a spinach salad this week with strawberries on it because the strawberries were on sale, and I definitely want to change up that plain old salad that I've been eating for the last 6 weeks or 8 weeks. Go ahead.
It seems to me that a lot of what you're discussing is really starting to create consciousness.
Yes.
And it's interesting, and I'm sure for the amount of years and the amount of people that you've worked with, that you find that there was such an underlying and emotional attachment to the food and the types of food that people eat, how it's prepared, and there's like all this deep meaning behind that. It's so easy for this emotion to kind of take over and to have people on autopilot when it comes to, you know, how they eat, what they eat, where they eat it, and everything associated with food.
Absolutely. And especially when they're shopping. So I think most people don't want to spend hours in the grocery store identifying every single, you know, item, breaking down all those nutrition facts and those food labels. I mean, it could take hours and hours and hours, but they also go into that sort of unconscious mode, and they're on autopilot, like you said, and they just go and they put the same bananas in the basket, and they put the same cereal in the basket, and they put the same, you know, canned goods and crackers in the basket, and that's it. They're at the checkout line, and they're on their way home. So that's also going to create that same pattern of when the emotions run happy, sad, mad, angry, you know, good times, they're going to go to those same foods. So part of breaking that cycle is absolutely being more aware when you're shopping and knowing, yeah, I am emotionally attached to this particular item. You know, it makes me feel good, but maybe I can have this instead. And also knowing, well, that's a trigger food for me. That's a food that realistically I can't just have a small one serving of and move on. That's something that I will eat and eat again and eat a third time and a fourth time throughout the day, or, you know, finish it all in one sitting. So the more conscious and aware you are when you're shopping and what you're putting in your cart, I noticed you guys did a cart check, but you can all do your own cart checks, you know, midway through your grocery shopping, at the end of your grocery shopping, and really look in there and say, well, what did I get? And, you know, we'll go through the different categories. But I don't expect anybody to redo their whole entire, you know, grocery shopping cart in one time. It's not going to happen in one shopping trip. So it's going to happen in steps, and it's going to be beneficial to break it down into those different categories in order to identify, okay, well, what am I looking at today? So when you think about how you're going to fill your cart in a healthy way and follow this plate that we want to divide into those three categories of vegetables, lean protein, slow-burning carbs, you want to think about shopping the perimeter. That's where you'll find those items. You're going to find your produce. Usually when you first walk into a grocery store, it's right there for you. You know, you'll walk the back of the wall and you usually find the meat department, or in the fish department, the seafood department. And then, you know, you can sort of also grab your grains and things in the aisles or in the produce department as well. So the more you look at those different categories on your plate, you know, when you're picking up something and throwing it in your cart because it looks like a good price, you can also stop a second and ask yourself, wait a second, does this fit? Where would I put
right.
this? How would I have this? How would I incorporate this into a meal? And hopefully,
right.
you know, in a good way, but if you can't figure out how it's going to fit, then maybe that day it's not the best time to buy that item.
Well, you know, here's one of the things. I just did a small card that I gave out to anyone after the fact, because what I basically wanted to do when we did the shopping tour was to have everyone shop as they normally would, you know, because I asked people to come prepared to shop.
Uh-huh.
So you're
going to
come basically do your regular shopping, and then from there you bring your cart, and then we do the evaluation afterwards. And there were some people who were, I think you said you saw on the Facebook, there's some people who were like a little bit overwhelmed, and there was some encouragement. It's like, really just take your time because things are going to get better, because a lot of the stuff is just, you know, the habitual pattern that's been played out and played out. But we wanted to utilize that as an opportunity to make people more consciously aware of what was really happening. And so what I put on the card, and I'm actually interested in hearing what you have to say about it, is just healthy shopping tips. So one, plan your meals ahead, which you said, you know, pretty much up front. Then number two, assess your refrigerator first. And that's a challenge that I have in my house, too, because I do. I am the guy who loves going to the supermarket. I don't know why it is. My wife barely does any of the shopping, barely. I do 95% of it. And I find sometimes if I don't assess their refrigerator, we have two of them, so I assess both of them, that I end up buying the same items and you see food going to waste, which is not a good thing, obviously. Then three was only shop with a list. And, you know, pretty much for the same reason, and also because you want to make sure that you're efficient. But for me, if for some reason I don't shop with the list, I don't mind going back anyway. Then the other one, number four, which I found to be big, don't shop while you are hungry.
Oh, yeah. That is a big, big one. And everybody knows the reason why we shouldn't shop when we're hungry. So the number of impulse purchases goes through the roof, and we're not impulsively buying more vegetables. So that, you know, that definitely doesn't work. And I've told people, not necessarily while they're in the grocery store, but, you know, grab an apple, go to the checkout, pay for the apple, step outside, eat the apple, and come back in. Take that 5 minutes. It will make a significant difference. So there's nothing more difficult, and it's not even just when you're shopping, but when you come home from a long day and you're extremely hungry, you also aren't making great dinner choices.
The reason is
because when you're hungry, your blood sugar is usually lower. You're not necessarily as clear as you would be. And so you look for stuff that is more quick energy. And that's why I say it's usually not the broccoli you're getting impulsively. It's usually, you know, quick carbs, high sugar, things that your body knows based on just previous experience. Oh, this is going to lift me up really fast. So absolutely agree with every single one of those, and I second all of them as well. So, and
let me share the other ones with you too.
This is where the
people had gotten a real big challenge with. Number five, purchase from the perimeter, which is what you said. I agree. I'm wondering, is it mandated that every supermarket is set up like that? Because all the ones that I've ever gone to, they're all set up like that, right? The perimeter, you have like your produce on one side, and you have. If you have a baking or a deli, it's usually in like one of the corners, and then you have like dairy, it's usually on the side of the perimeter, dairy and eggs and things in refrigeration, and then, but it's always like kind of situated like that, right?
Yep, absolutely. So you usually have that.
Right. So usually you want to do the vast majority of your purchases from the perimeter. Then it says learn how to read food labels, and that's six. That's where a lot of people got confused, because without knowing how to read the label and going through serving sizes, and when you see something that's fat-free, looking for where the other appetizing enticement is in there in terms of the ingredients, hydrogenated oil, some things can say, well, they don't contain any trans fat, but then you find that they have some kind of hydrogenated oil, so I don't know how they're getting away with that on the labeling. But, you know, it's really putting together the puzzle, really, of what's really going on here.
Yeah, answer your question. If per serving there's less than 0.5 grams of partially hydrogenated oils, they can list it at zero.
Well,
so
I
didn't make that up. I don't know why that exists, but that is the current labeling regulation.
so you don't want to look
at the ingredient list, absolutely.
Right, exactly. And I think it has a high degree of the lobbying coming from the food companies. And, you know, we have that ongoing conspiracy conversation that goes on with how are they allowed to do this kind of stuff. And there's obviously some things that are out there that, you know, to be quite frank with you, are set up to deceive the public.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, there are challenges, and it's not always meant to be clear and easy.
Right.
So, and that's actually why I was so excited when I was offered this position at ShopRite, because I've been a dietitian for over 10 years, and I've worked in a hospital setting, in a community setting, in a research setting, and of course I'm always talking to people about how do you grocery shop and what do you buy, and they would come back to me just as confused as when they left. So to be able to actually walk through the aisles with people while they're shopping, I mean, I get stopped in the aisle literally, and people show me two packages of bird's eye. This is happening this week. So it was like the bird's eye, the, you know, sort of already made meals. It's like a pasta vegetable. And we compared the labels of the two, and it was significantly different with something that looked, one had much much greater volume of vegetables, and the other one had a much greater volume of pasta. So calorically, it was a big difference. Sodium content was significantly different. So even though this woman absolutely knew how to look at the label, it was still not 100% clear to her. So as I said, you know, for ShopRite to say, hey, you know, come on board, come in the store, help our shoppers, you know, do this, you know, provide this service for them. This is definitely something grocery stores know consumers struggle with. And, you know, so ShopRite said, here you go. You know, and so as I said, it's nothing more rewarding for me than to be able to do it right there in the aisle, because I know I've had the experience as a dietitian, you know, in a hospital setting saying, okay, this is what you need to get, and then having that same person come back to me and say, oh, I got bought this, that, and the other thing, and none of them really followed the guideline.
No.
So it is a process. It's definitely something that the more you look at the label, the more you read the label, the more you take your time within different categories, the easier it gets. So it's not impossible, and that's why I said look at the nutrition facts. Don't just look at the front of the box if it claims to be, you know, less fat or light or low fat. It may not necessarily be the better option.
Right.
So really go through that. And so, yeah.
When I started studying those definitions of what they mean,
yeah.
it is amazing, because there are legal definitions of what those things mean, and they're not, most of the time, and at least in my opinion, they're not in concert with what the public would necessarily perceive it to be. Like you said, zero trans fat is different than no trans fat.
Mm-hmm.
And light is in, if I recall correctly, light is about being in comparison to its counterpart, the counterpart of the same item.
Exactly. So to the original. So if it says, you know, light yogurt, it's not necessarily low calorie, it just is lighter than the original version. So less calorie.
Lighter than the original version. Right. And so getting a handle on what that means is paramount, I think, for people being able to make educated choices, because you say, well, I'm doing well because I'm having light this or low fat that, or even in some cases organic this. And that may not be in concert with what they're looking to achieve.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know, that's also why when you're shopping the perimeter, it's a little bit easier.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you're in the produce department, you don't really need to know the calories. You just know those are all going to be, you know, filling foods that are rich in nutrients that are low in calories. So, you know, that's something that you can at least go through for the most part and say, you know, what I get in this section is pretty much going to work for me. And just getting a little bit into those details, you know, when you're making your list, you know, be realistic with yourself. Know how much time you're willing to spend on your meals. So, you know, you're going to get stuff that's going to be a little bit easier for you, like the bagged salads or the pre-cut vegetables. So that's going to make it easier as far as when you go home, you're not going to have to spend as much time if time is of, you know, an issue. and what can I do specifically? I often tell people, you know, remember that, you know, eating, let's say, an apple before a meal or a piece of fruit before a meal can actually save you 25% of those calories during that meal. So those are things you want to make sure you have enough of to have for snacks and rides home on the way to work. And if you do really like those avocados, just keep the serving size in mind. So if you buy one avocado or two avocados, you don't necessarily want to eat it all at one meal.
Right.
But that's, you know, again, one of those categories where you can also experiment with some new things. So there are some, you know, shirataki noodles. They're really low calorie, really low carbs, that people maybe just walk past, have never tried before. They might be worth trying. You can get hummus, a good substitute for mayonnaise. There's the little guacamole, the holy guacamole. They're pre-portioned into 100-calorie packs. So if you can't do the quarter of avocado, you know that's not realistic, but you love guacamole, then you can get something like one of those. And especially with produce, because seasons change and it definitely affects the, you know, taste a little bit as well as the cost of the product, I often tell people, think about, well, what haven't I had in the last 6 months? So if you're always buying apples and bananas, okay, can I get a different fruit? Can I maybe get pears and oranges this time, or berries and, you know, something else?
Right.
So produce is definitely usually a safe bet for most people. And I'm not talking about, you know, if you have health issues like diabetes, then we have to sort of go into that a little bit more detailed. But for the most part, you're good as far as weight management. And I often tell people to erase some of those things that they've heard, like, oh, you know, this fruit is fattening. So for the most part, we don't gain weight eating too much vegetable or fruit. So we're usually okay with that. And then the fish department. So unfortunately, as Americans, most of us don't eat enough lean protein, and really seafood is a great source of lean protein. And I know you were definitely saying fish as well, so I was so happy to hear that because, you know, 2 times a week is the recommendation for heart health. But when you're looking to change things up a little bit, you know, there's a lot of variety there, and you can get those individually packaged, you know, salmon and tilapia, and you don't necessarily have to know what you're having, you know, on Sunday by Friday, but if you're going to eat fish on Friday, on Thursday you can look in the freezer and say, oh, wait, I have these two options. Maybe I'll take one out. Frozen shrimp and scallop are great options, and even canned or the packets of tuna. So the vacuum packs of tuna, you can get the low-sodium version. You can take those with you to work, some whole grain crackers and some salad, and you're set. So definitely thinking, yeah, how can I do this twice a week? And I've just, you know, talking about cycling, I was recently inspired by, even if it's imitation, I don't mind so much, but the imitation crab meat and how I can maybe use this a little bit just to switch things up a little bit. So when you're getting sort of, you know, tired of the same old, there are things there that you can find. And just the only concern I have with fish is usually people, they're accustomed to frying it, and that does take away from it being a good lean, low-calorie protein source. So getting creative and finding other ways to make it tasty, so, you know, sautéing it, broiling it, baking it, adding some spices and seasonings to it to jazz it up a little bit. For the most part, a lot of fish is mild, so can definitely be something to include. And then in the meat department, you talked about sometimes it being confusing by the labels. I often like to tell people, you know, we definitely want to choose the lean cuts, but don't take the word so literally, because a lean package or a lean cut of meat, so for like ground turkey, they can put lean on the label as long as it has less than 10 grams of fat for a 3-ounce serving.
Mm-hmm.
So not necessarily the leanest choice. So it's just less fat than, you know, maybe the standard, but you can get extra lean as well. And that's less than 5 grams per serving. So when you're looking in that department, look for the extra lean.
Because I found that pretty pretty confusing in the past myself, because I just never researched what was the determination to decide whether something was going to be lean, because you see something that says 95%. We went over the milk part when we were at the shopping store. But, well, which is amazing to me. But it's the same thing when you're talking about picking up, let's say, a package of ground turkey, and the ground turkey says 95% lean.
Mm-hmm.
But when you decipher how it shows up from the math of the calories, it's very easy for that 95 or 94% lean packaged ground turkey to really be like 30% fat.
Yeah. So the label lean has to do with the sort of the volume of meat, as opposed to the percentage has to do with your total daily calories. So how those grams fit into your total daily calories, as opposed to how they fit into the weight of the meat. So it is a little bit confusing, but I think once your eyes are opened to the, not even so much that you have to remember the amount of grams per term, so lean versus extra lean, but just be aware that I want extra lean, and I want to look at the label, and I want it to say, you know, less than 5 grams of fat per serving. So
right.
Once you are a little bit more in tune to that confusion, then it allows you to just take it to the next step. And then even the different types of cuts. So sometimes it's very visible when you look at a piece of meat. You can see the more marbling is going to be the more fat. It's going to be the higher calories. And you can actually see, okay, that's a really lean cut, and I can trim the fat around that, and that's going to be a great choice for me. Or just knowing top sirloin and bottom round steaks, those are going to be the leaner choices. And so maybe they're not as tender, maybe they're not as flavorful initially, but I know I can, you know, marinate it or cook it a little bit differently so that I will make it tender, I will add flavor to it. So if you're planning ahead and you know that you want to purchase this particular cut of meat, you might look for some specific recipes that allow to make that a little bit tastier and a little bit better for you.
Well, it's interesting that you say that, and you speak about the different options that people have in terms of their preparation. Because I always say that, you know, you have that people have power, and you have the power to think, power to learn, power to act. And I think one of the challenges that many people have is the big power, and that's the power to change.
Yeah.
And that. They have been, and I say they, I'm talking about all of us inclusively, have been accustomed to operating things in a certain manner and saying that, okay, I'm not where I want to be, but I know that if I do certain things that I can make some changes. But then when it comes down to actually putting those changes into action, it's so easy to just fall back into the momentum of what's familiar.
Mm-hmm. And
when you can start undertaking things like you just said, well, you know, maybe it may not initially taste the way I think it'll taste, but I can employ other strategies in order to make it so that it can be appealing to me.
Yeah. And I often find that even when I'm doing a demo, I'm offering people samples in the store, people will say no before they really even know what it is, just based on their preconceived, you know, notion of what that should taste like. So, you know, people might just hear the word, oh, this is a bean dish, and oh, no, I don't want to try it, based on dishes they've maybe tried in the past that they didn't like, not based on this recipe that they've never seen or tasted before. So I often want people, too, to just keep in mind when they're planning meals, when they're looking at recipes, to almost forget a little bit of what you assume you like and don't like. Because our tastes do change over time. And you can, you know, be creative with your dishes. And when you sort of go in with more of an open mind to change, you'll be successful. But if you say to yourself, I'm not going to like this, then you've already tasted it and you're not going to like it. So really just trying to be open to tasting things that are different. And don't assume either that your family members or your children won't like it. I'll give them the opportunity to taste it and try it. And that's the other, you know, sort of part of the process of changing. So, you know, you might just look at something from the front of the package and think, oh, that's not good. But really, one, you may never have tasted it before or tried it before, or two, it may have been so long ago that it's not really a good comparison. So just absolutely be open to trying new things, tasting new things, you know, putting things together in a different way. So it's important. It's definitely important. And our taste buds do change. So there's people who I always use the example of, you know, they've gone through most of their life drinking whole milk. Over the course of, I don't know, a couple of years, they've changed over to 1% or skim milk. And now if they go back to whole milk, they can say, oh, I don't really like it. So, it's, you know, it's sort of also partly mindset, even though they drank it all their life. So vice versa, you'll eventually, you know, your taste buds will adapt and you might start to enjoy different flavors, different tastes, different cuts, different varieties.
Right. Well, the thing that you just spoke about, I witnessed that myself when I was with you at the demo. As a matter of fact, if you pick up today's Advance, I don't know if we're
over,
but if you pick up today's,
yes.
We're in there. And so, I mean, the extended period of time when I spent with you, you know, stepping into your world, I can confirm that what you're saying is actually true, that you have these people who walk by and they're inquisitive, but they want to know exactly what it is before they're even willing to give it a try.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember at one period of time, I felt that way about sushi. I was like, oh, raw fish, I'll never eat on them. Then as I started moving up in the business world, and when I used to be in banking, there's a much greater call to action to eat, you know, different types of foods. And not to say that I'm, you know, approved when it came to that. It's just that I just couldn't get past the raw fish.
Uh-huh.
But then I tried it, and then now I try to eat sushi as often as I possibly can.
And now you can't get enough. Exactly.
Exactly. I mean, at earlier before, I would just think, like, no, I'm never going to eat that stuff. Are you kidding me? And it was just being able to, that barrier to be able to allow myself to experience it allowed me to get something that, you know, that's really a significant part of my, at least my external eating, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So I think we can all think back of examples of that. And we often see it, you know, sort of very clearly with children. You know, they won't taste it. And there's a term for it, like children are neophobic. But I also, they don't want to try new things. But I think for adults, the more we get into our habits and our routines and our, you know, 20 foods that we really enjoy, we become a little neophobic as well. We don't want to try new things. And so that's definitely going to be part of the adventure. And if you are open to it and welcome it as part of the process, then I think it'll make it easier for you. And the changes will follow because you'll want to maybe try new things based on, and it's not always going to be great. And I tell people that all the time. You know, this, it's not 100% guarantee that you're going to like it, but the fact that you tried it starts you moving in the right direction. I get that with
I definitely agree.
Yeah, and with dairy, it's interesting because that's sort of the next little category there. Dairy is really important, calcium anyway. In the process of weight management and weight loss, we need 1,200 milligrams of calcium a day. So that could equal 3 servings of dairy, low-fat dairy. Also being cautious for things that are high in sugar. So I often tell people, you know, if you can go plain first. So with yogurts and things like that. And then with portion sizes, you got to be careful with things sometimes like cheese because it's hard to maybe just have one slice. So finding things that are pre-packaged to help you limit your portion sizes. I really like the little individual things, like the Laughing Cow and the Bells and so that the one-ounce servings are already divided up for you. But with Greek yogurt, it was a great example of, I would say about 5 years ago, most people would say to you, oh, I don't like Greek yogurt, or I'm not going to try it. And now most people have tried it. Many people have liked it. Often people who really like it don't even go back to the traditional yogurts. So it's also, you know, just exposure. Sometimes the more we expose ourselves to the food, it doesn't even have to be taste-wise, but, you know, we see it, we look at it, we consider it, the more likely we are to taste it with an open mind and enjoy it. So keeping that also in mind when you're going through that section. And
so what's the benefit of Greek yogurt as compared to traditional yogurt?
It's the protein content. So mm-hmm. for the same volume, you're usually getting, twice the protein, which if you're talking about fullness and satiety, you tend to feel fuller longer when you get a little bit more protein in. It also, depending if it's not a high sugar content yogurt, it can you're not going to raise your blood sugar as quickly. So it's
gotcha.
Going to get absorbed a little bit slower. So it's really,
gotcha.
That's the main benefit to it. Traditional yogurt is definitely fine. So it doesn't mean if you don't like Greek, you shouldn't eat yogurt. But that's the benefit. That's usually the draw for a lot of people is that they, when consume it, they get a little more protein. They feel a little more satisfied.
Well, I really like the Greek yogurt personally. I mean, I just like yogurt, you know, anyway, it doesn't bother me. We have a question that got emailed in. It says, one question, are we allowed to eat fruit? It says fruity. I'm assuming they're saying fruits while we're watching our diets. I'm a little confused. And, let me hear your opinion. I want to just chime in because I know why this person is asking this question.
If we're allowed to eat fruit?
Yes.
Just
the actual question is, are we allowed to eat fruity? I'm assuming that
she's Yeah, I would absolutely say yes, you are allowed to eat fruit when you're trying to follow a weight management plan. If you're following, and this is where the term diet gets confusing, and I hope I didn't use it too much in our talk at all, but I often like to talk about this as a lifestyle change, and I wouldn't want anybody to give up fruit for the rest of their life. There are lots of nutritional benefits. They're high nutrient. They're usually high in water, high in fiber. They're a great way to satisfy a desire for something sweet. So if you're just talking about eating healthier to manage weight, absolutely. If you're following more of like a specific diet or a plan that, like a book plan, and it might have an induction phase that it tells you don't eat fruit for the first 2 weeks. I can't answer that clearly. So in my personal opinion, as someone who's studied nutrition for, two decades probably, I think fruit is definitely something you want to include in a healthy eating plan to manage weight. But I do know there are lots of diet plans that restrict it in the beginning because when you're cutting out those carbohydrates, you decrease the water content or the water in your body, and you see a drop in the numbers on the scale.
Right. Well, and now there's also sort of like I don't want to say bodybuilding, but there's part of that process where helping people to get as lean as possible where – we were at some point in time, even I think I mentioned it in part of the slim down, that you get the opportunity to eliminate fruit for a short period of time only for the purpose of managing your blood sugar and influencing your body to release more glucagon and less insulin and allowing your body to relinquish some more body fat during a short period of time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the only justification by it because, again, when we utilize that whole process, it's really down the stretch after they've done, like, the first at least 6 to 7 weeks of the program and saying, okay, what we're going to do now is we're going to start to perform what's called carb rotation, where we start to eliminate the starchy carbohydrates for a short period of time. And, again, it's all done for the purpose of body fat loss. And it's a very effective process, but, I think in the past, on occasion, I've been misquoted because by saying, well, you don't want to include fruit in your diet, and I don't say that at all. What I'm saying is that it's a strategy that we employ in order to influence the body to start to relinquish some body fat for a short period of time. And it's part of a phase of the program. Pretty similar to what you're talking about with an induction.
Mm-hmm.
And
exactly.
Like I said, it's just done for that. It's just done for that purpose. And then, I encourage people to go right back to the whole metabolic nutrition process.
And that's also why I hope that when I said earlier, too, like if you're diabetic, it's a different story. It's,
mm-hmm.
Then you're not going to be using fruit you know, in an unlimited amount or as you any time you want, because it does have an effect on your blood sugar. So, but if you're not diabetic and you're not following that sort of phase of the plan, then I think fruit is definitely something you can include. So I think that's a personal decision people need to make. And if they definitely, you know, want to try it, I often say, you know, if it's a short-term goal and you're cautious about getting in those nutrients in other ways and you're still doing lots of vegetables, then you don't have to eat fruit. But you want to think about what's the purpose of doing it and, you know, what specific foods do I want to include instead of those.
Well, you know, I think, again, my opinion is that's exactly what the case is. You just hit it on the head, is that you want to be able to do this stuff consciously, because what frustrates me more so than anything, and I mentioned this in some, probably on the Facebook and even at one of the meetings, is that I'm committed to having less people try to do a few things. Number one, to stop reinventing the wheel. And the reason why the program is laid out so precisely over this given period of time, and 10 weeks is done for the specific purpose of, I had a client when I was discussing putting this whole thing together, and I said, I want it to be either a 12-week program or a 16-week program. She said, you know what? 16 weeks is definitely not going to work, and 12 is not going to work as effectively as you'd like. It's got to be 10. So I said, well, why does it have to be 10? She goes, it's got to be 10 because after the first week, you're only at single digits.
Oh.
And that made, I tell you, that made all the sense in the world. Because once you get, because if it expands past that, then it's going to be a lot more difficult for people to have compliance. But what we're doing in the meantime is that we're teaching lifestyle. And we understand that after a given period of time, people, as they start to acquire these habits, they're going to be more likely to continue. But again, putting that 10-week cap on everything, it really gives them an in and an out, and it's more psychological than anything.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't want them to reinvent the wheel, because everything is really laid out for them. Secondly, is that we're trying to overcome people's propensity to be on diets, because the diets in the long term have not worked. I have worked with so many people in the process of trying to get their nutrition on point, and again, operating within the limited scope of practice that I'm able to operate in, and to really just to make it simple and common sense. But the challenge is that these people, they go from one diet to the next diet to the next diet. Okay, I did the Atkins diet, then I did the carb lover diet, then I did the sugar blues diet. And like, okay, you listen to all the diets that they've been on, you say, well, I lost 20 pounds here, I lost 15 pounds here, I lost 30 pounds here. And if you added them all up, you're like, wow, you should weigh like negative 17 with all the weight that you've lost on all these diets. But what's the problem? Is that they put all the weight back on and more.
Yeah, and that's the benefit of thinking long term. I mean, I had the opportunity to work on a research study that people volunteered for, but they made the commitment to do this for 1 year. And it was such a different perspective when I met with people who knew, okay, I'm doing this for a year, and I'm going to see you every week for the first 6 months and then at least once a month for the second 6 months, because their perspective changed on what was acceptable to do in those first 6 weeks or 10 weeks. So yeah. I really, you know, it's sort of when you said that whole number 10 and going into the single digits, it also sort of set that light bulb off for me, because, you know, it really – the way you approach the process, short-term goals, long-term goals, and we always broke things down into short-term goals as well, because you want to see some change initially, and you don't want it to feel like it's going to take forever.
Right.
And at the same time, you want to be committed forever. So it's really this, like, fine line, I think, when you're looking at it. So if you break it down into small steps, and this is a great first step, is the 10-week, you know, slim down challenge. And then what do you do for the rest of the year? And really it's continuing to goal set, set those goals and adding another 10 weeks to the first 10 weeks and setting, you know, a new strategy for that second half of it. and just looking at it, like, how can I continue? And that's the other thing I tell people. When you're looking in your grocery carts now, you know, you're doing good things. Just highlight those good things. Make sure you are continuing to do those good things and you realize, oh, these are good foods I've always picked and I always really enjoy these. And now maybe these, you know, two items, I can use improvement on those. What specific things can I get instead of this particular variety of bread and this snack food? And so if you do that at that one trip, so just like with this whole process, it's going to go, you know, for the course of a year, it's going to go for a lifetime. Same thing with the grocery shopping. It's going to go per trip. So what am I doing today? What am I doing on this trip to make it short term, to make it achievable, to make it realistic? So don't expect anybody to spend the entire grocery shopping trip going through every single category. But if this week you're just focusing on, you know, what are some quick, you know, crackers I could take with me to work, then that's what you identify that week. And then next week you don't have to look at those because you already know what you got.
Got it.
You know, it's definitely steps and the focus is long-term change. So I do always question when people come with a specific diet, you know, what did you do well on that diet? What are things you felt like stuck with you that you can live with? And then you can continue to carry those on, but not necessarily looking at them as like that was part of my sugar blues diet. But this is something that I enjoy doing and that I like to do, and I just continue doing it. And as well as incorporating new changes. So when you're deciding to change something in your eating plan or in your grocery shopping, I often think, you know, people should ask them the question, you know, how does this fit long term? Is it realistic that I can continue this? So you don't want to change the kind of, you know, starches you're eating, but suffer through it for the 10 weeks and then go back to the old ones.
And that raises a big topic for me, too, because we showed the movie Fat, Sick, and Nearly Dead. Have you seen it?
I have not. I still need to see that, yes.
Okay. Well, the story is about a guy from Australia who's got some type of skin condition that's an outbreak from some unhealthy practice that he has. So he decides that he's going to spend, I think it was like 45 or 60 days on a juicing fast.
Okay.
And he ends up losing like 80-something pounds during that time period and getting himself back to healthy. And he incorporates exercise, and the documentary is him going through the whole process while he's traveling along the country, interviewing people about their health, their wellness, and their nutrition.
Mm-hmm.
And so it kind of inspired people, and I had some folks who were coming up to me afterwards and saying, wow, you know what? I watched the movie, and I got inspired, and next thing you know, they're saying, I lost, you know, X amount of weight, you know, doing juicing. And part of me is, like, happy about it because, you know, you've taken some steps to really, you know, put yourself in a position of being healthy and losing weight. But the problem that when we had one of the producers came to the movie, and she says, someone asked me a question, well, if he's consuming nothing but juice, then what is, and he's exercising, does he have the nutrients necessary in order to provide for his protein needs? And she said, well, yeah, you know, he lost all this weight, and it's true that 30% of what he lost was muscle. And, you know, I don't want to, you know, necessarily voice my opinion at that point in time because, you know, we wanted to hear about the movie documentary. But, you know, afterwards we had the conversation. I was like, that's not a good thing. You know, the fact that he lost the weight was great. And, again, he did it for medical reasons. And he got off his medication and, you know, he got all these great results because he really needed to lose that weight. But the fact that he lost, the 30% of the weight that he lost came from muscle tissue is not a good thing. And so one of the challenges that I have with folks who decide that they're going to start juicing and they're going to go into something that's going to be so drastic is that they become more aware of everything that's associated with it and then also become educated in the process and what the aftermath is.
Mm-hmm. and knowing how you can also, if you're interested in doing the juicing, you know, am I doing it in the healthiest way I can do it? So is this something that I'm doing correctly, or is it something so drastic that it might make me bounce back to old behaviors? And that's where I'm always sort of cautious when people want to try something. I think it's great to try something new, but to the level of how extremely different it could be from what you're currently doing, I just don't want that rubber band effect where you do it for a couple of weeks, it has a positive effect, but it was so difficult, so stressful, even physically on the body where you're saying you're losing all this muscle mass as well, that when I'm done with the juicing, I'm still not sure where to go next. So that's about just being prepared and planning and thinking about how this fits into the long term of it.
Gotcha.
So, yeah. And it is, I mean, there are definitely medical conditions that you want to know, you know, if you're considering doing an extremely drastic change in your eating plan, can this affect me medication-wise, health-wise, so, you know, exercise-wise, am I still going to have the energy I need? Am I still going to, you know, feel good and be able to get through my day? So I always just want people to, you know, be aware, like you're saying, you know, what are the consequences? What are the benefits? So weigh those options a little bit. And what works for one person doesn't always work for the next person. It doesn't mean it's not worth trying because you might learn something from it. But don't put all your money in that basket and say, well, I'm going to do that too, and that's going to be the answer for me. And then if it's not the answer for you, you go back to the old ways.
Right. I mean, one of the wisest things that anyone ever told me was never seek a temporary solution to what looks like a permanent problem.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the reasons why, you know, the whole diet thing is just not a remedy that I encourage my clients to seek, at least. To say, well, like you said before, which was, how can you evaluate what you're doing now as something potentially that you're going to be doing ongoing? Because if you can't see yourself doing that, then going back to some of the psychology of it behind is that you're setting yourself up for such disappointment and discouragement that you may end up missing out on the opportunity that's really going to be the long-term difference for you.
And we change over time, and that's the other thing I really learned about, you know, people when I was on that research study was, you know, you can try something 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 times, and it doesn't work the first 5 times. And for some reason, it works the 6th time. So, you know, our cycles of change are different, and when we jump into this process of trying to do something new, trying to be better and healthier and live a more fulfilling life and have more quality of life, you could even try the same thing over and over again. And, you know, I'm just going to try to go to the gym an extra time a week, or I'm just going to try to, you know, bring my lunch to work. Oh, well, it didn't work last year. It's definitely not going to work this year. It might. I mean, so we change. We're different. Our opinions are different. Our experiences are different. So we learn something every single time. And there's never, you know, even if things don't go 100% the right way, if you learn from the experience and you know, oh, well, this I can do this better next time. And it really does just sort of bring it back to the grocery shopping. You know, it's not always going to be about having the perfect cart every time you leave the grocery store. But if you leave the grocery store with a few new items that are healthier for you and going to get you to your goal, and then a few of those same items that make it a little harder, but you're learning from it. How can I do this better next time? What was the challenge with getting this? And, you know, what can I do to continue to make progress? So not feeling overwhelmed by the process, not feeling like you have to, you know, there isn't a perfect cart. And I'll tell you, people come to me, they recognize my face a little bit now. When they see me shopping in the store, they'll come up to me and they'll say, what are you buying? Especially my coworkers. What are you buying? What's in your cart? Oh, you're getting those? So, you know, as a dietitian, I've read the labels. I know what's in the food, but sometimes I'm still going to choose to get the treat or get something that I'm getting strictly because I enjoy eating it or my kids enjoy eating it. And for the most part, I definitely try to follow the guidelines that help my family eat healthier, and we're, you know, what's going to enable us to be a little bit more successful. So, you know, we have to sit down and look at the circular and see what's in there. And, you know, the fact that, as I said in the beginning, oh, strawberries are on sale this week, you know, I definitely left the store today with a container of strawberries. So,
right.
you know, I don't want to eat the same things week after week after week, even though I'm a creature of habit like most individuals. So just trying to find ways to mix it up a little bit. But it's never about being perfect. And I'm always available for questions and cart checks. So anytime someone comes up to me and says, what do you think about this? I'm definitely ready to, you know, dive into the conversation. And I love being approached in the store. I really enjoy it when people come up to me with questions. And I'll sometimes hear people asking, you know, another customer a question, a nutrition-related question. And I think it's helpful just to start the conversation. So no need to just have to have all the answers ourselves or, you know, what do you think about this product or have you tried that? I love hearing that in the store as well. You know, people just comparing, like, oh, I've never tried the Dreamfield pasta. I know it's supposed to be good for diabetics. What do you think about it? Does it taste okay? So, you know, sharing ideas and doing it sort of with the group and support and community, and that's the great thing, too, that I thought was just so amazing about the Slim Down. It's just this opportunity. You have this pool of people. If everybody tried one new recipe a month, you know, the feedback you'd get from that is tremendous. So, you know, put those things on Facebook. Absolutely. What new recipes have you tried this week? What new item did you find in the grocery store? So those are, you know, things that help people and motivate people. And I think when it comes from one person to another, as far as I tasted, I tried it, and this is the recipe I used, it's a little bit easier than just grabbing it out of a random recipe book.
I agree. Well, look, we have to wrap this up because I know last time we were together, we were speaking for an hour long.
It'll be midnight if they don't cut the phone conversation off.
Exactly. So can you just repeat how our callers and listeners can get in touch with you and get information about your services?
Oh, absolutely. So one thing you can do is just go on the Slim Down website and get my phone number, which if you have a pen now, you can grab it. It's just 718-979-3303, extension 226. Leave me a message. I'll call you back. It's free individual counseling, free store tours, free recipe ideas, menu planning. And if you want to go online as well, ShopRite.com has all my calendar events. So I don't actually list the Slim Down seminars on there because I just don't want everybody and anybody to try to get into those because they're already pretty booked up. But I do have a couple of more seminars that I'm doing in the store. So National Nutrition Month is this month, and the theme is Get Your Plate in Shape. So we'll really be just sort of digging in deeper a little bit more on what healthy meals look like and what foods we can include in order to create those healthy meals at home, get more balance in there. So those seminars are still open, so people can definitely feel free to register for those if they haven't been able to get into the ones that I designated specifically for the Slim Down participants. And it's going to be, So Richmond Avenue, it's on March 22nd at 6 p.m., or Highland Boulevard, it's Friday, March 23rd at 10 a.m. So, again, you can call the number or go online and look at the calendar events. So ShopRite.com has a tab on the top. It's for your family. And then underneath that tab, you'll find a dietitian's corner. And when you click on that, you'll see on the upper left-hand side a health events tab, and it's the two Staten Island stores. The calendar will pop up for those.
Awesome.
Yep, so it's, as I said, it's a free service, so definitely feel free to utilize it, and I will happily walk the grocery aisles with you and help break that down a little bit more.
Terrific. So once again, Andrea, I want to thank you for spending time with us. I appreciate you. I appreciate sharing ideas with you and learning from you, and I also appreciate your involvement in the Slim Down. And people have had nothing but great things to say about the workshops that you've been putting together. So,
great.
I think that's fantastic.
Well, I appreciate being a part of this, and I've been inspired, I have to say. So I did my own little fitness challenge, and it wasn't as good as I was hoping it was going to be. So hopefully you'll see me at one of the fitness surprises. I'll be participating in the my own little 5-week challenge here. So I need to hurry up and get on board with the exercise arm of this program. So, thank you for all the inspiration. And I've checked the Facebook page too every once in a while. So hopefully I'll see some recipes or some food ideas on there as well. So.
Got it. I'll send out some encouragement for people to do that.
Great. Well, thank
you. All righty,
my
dear. So thanks so much again for your time.
Yes, and have a great evening.
Yes, and this recording will be posted on the Slim Down page in the Success Tools area. You'll be able to download and listen to it back as an MP3. So everyone who's listening, thanks for being part of it, and we'll talk to you soon. All the best.
Take care, guys. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye.